Welcome to the new you, life after losing someone to suicide. I'm Dawn.
I'm Trisha.
And we're two mothers who lost daughters to suicide. Our purpose is to share with you what our loss has done and the new people we have become because of it. Our goal is to give you insight and understanding of the journey of learning to live again.
Listeners are invited to accompany us on our journey of recovery, healing, and rediscovery. We offer a raw and candid depiction of learning to live after the greatest loss. We will share with you the everyday struggles, inner battles, raw emotions, and the guilt that we navigate. Take our hand and walk with us while we fight to save ourselves after we could not save our children. Follow as we find our new soul family and others who walk the same path. We hope to bring you a different perspective through conversations with experts, other people affected by suicide loss, as well as those who have struggled with their own suicidal thoughts.
So what we'd like to start with is just kind of introducing ourselves and our families and how we got here. So Trisha, if you would like to go ahead.
Hi. I have three children of my own, Morgan, Chance, and Paige. My husband also has three. They're grown and out of the house. I mean, I ran six of them at the same time, thank God. I guess the reason why we're here, of course, is I lost one to suicide. My oldest daughter struggled with a little bit of depression in high school. It was nothing super alarming to me. It was the everyday. And I don't want to discredit that, not the everyday high school depression, but you know, there was a little bullying, there was a little boyfriend drama, and there was some ups and downs, and there was more ups than there was downs from my perspective. And so it wasn't something that I thought would last forever. You know, I thought she would get through it and we would be good. And she did. She went on to college and everything seemed to go okay. In 2018, we lost two nephews to suicide. So that brought a different dynamic to our family. We saw firsthand the damage it does to those left behind and the trauma and how hard the climb back out of the hole is when you lose someone that close to you. And ironically, even though I sit here and I say we lost two nephews to suicide, you will still fall under the, which is a very silly idealization that suicide is something that happens to other people, because I sat in that second row, you know, behind my brother-in-law, and I watched my husband struggle, and I watched my youngest daughter struggle because my youngest nephew was her best friend, and I saw everything that happened, and I went through all those emotions, and it was our family, but it had never breached the walls of my home, so it's still something that happens to other people. And after Matt's passing, you will meet the boys as dad and siblings in a later podcast. He'll be joining us off and on, but after their passing, my middle daughter, Paige, kind of took a dive, and she struggled a lot without him. And she turned to my oldest daughter for support. And Morgan was her lifeline. There's things, obviously, that our children are not comfortable disclosing to their moms, their parents, no matter how close you are to them. And as much as we can be open with them and discuss everything with them and think that they're going to come to us when things like this happen, there is a sense of shame for them. Like, they feel like something's wrong with them, or, oh, my mom is going to be so upset and I don't want to upset her if I tell her. So there's things our kids don't tell us, as hard as that is for us to accept, right? Because we're supposed to know everything.
Right.
Paige would always go to her sister. And my oldest was pregnant, probably a few months pregnant, and she had called me at home and said, Paige called and said she's going to kill herself. She's on a gravel road somewhere. You have to find her. And she was frantic. She's pregnant already, emotional, and she's frantic. And we're calling all over, and we look, and we did find Paige. And that conversation that night was probably, you know, how when you can't find your child or you think something's wrong with them, and then you do find them, it's like, well, you're alive. Now I'm going to kill you, you know. So I was probably a little more forceful. And I sat down at the table. And my husband was probably not super thrilled with me. He was actually the person to find our youngest nephew after his passing, and he is not a talker, which is where we have a definite separation there, because I'm a talker, obviously. We talk constantly, and he doesn't. And he never really expressed what he was going through, losing Matt and finding him and having to tell his best friend and brother-in-law that his son was gone. And I sat Paige at the table, and I went and got my husband. I said, get out here. We're having a conversation. We're done with this. And I said, no, you two sit at the table. And I said, you are going to tell her exactly what it was like when you found Matt. And he said, I can't do that. I said, not only can you, you will. Because I'm not doing this with her. We're not doing this. We're not going to do it. She needs to know what this is like. And they had a very candid conversation, which was probably harder for him than her, because he is the old school guy that you just eat it and you don't say anything and life goes on and you just keep pushing, which is severely harmful to your mental health, your marriage, your relationships. And it's exhausting for him. But I think that was a small turning point for Paige. Like, we got her a different counselor and a different psychiatrist and different meds, and she did much better. I mean, she still turned to her sister for a lot of things, and so Paige was on the radar, you know. When we say that, like, on the radar, you know, people will say, oh, you know, you always know when people are going to commit suicide, you know, they said this or they did that. You don't always know, because Paige was on my radar. I watched her. I stalked her. I counted pills. I put a reminder on our phones to ring when it was time for her pills. We tracked her car. I knew where she was at every minute, every day. And if I didn't, I was crazy. You know, I was running around. And everyone in our family got acclimated to chasing Paige around. And at no point during that did it ever dawn on me that I was chasing the wrong child. Morgan was, much like probably your daughter was, in hindsight, I look and I depended on her a lot. Like, I was a single mom. I divorced their dad when we divorced when they were young. So she was the oldest. So she, by default, becomes the second parent, whether she wants to or not. You know, you're the oldest. You got to drive them to practice. You do this. And she was very close to her siblings. And she was very responsible kid. Had her ducks in a row. When I asked her to do something, she could do it. And she just set a very good example for her siblings. And never, never was she ever on my radar that I would be sitting here having this discussion about her. She got pregnant. And she did well through the pregnancy. And when her son was born, the first thing she said is, Mom, he's perfect. And I was blessed, and I will, you know, I will forever thank God for that day, because bless his soul, her significant other can gut a deer, but he definitely does not want to see a baby be born, because he was a trooper and he stood right up there and held her hand until that head crowned and he started to sway and he said, Mom, you got to get this because I cannot do it. So he tapped out and he sat on the couch until... That was probably one of the days that I am most grateful for, because I got to hold my oldest baby's hand with her and watch her have her baby. It was, I'll never get to do that with her again, you know? So we have certain memories and things that we share that are, be forever grateful for. And she didn't, you don't ever, you know, you always tell your kids, you'll understand when you have kids. As a mom, you know, we always say, well, I know what I want to be when I grow up, but we don't really truly find our purpose until you hold that first baby. And it's like, I always told her I didn't know who I was until I met you, and she would laugh at me. So the minute you opened your blue eyes, I knew right there, like, that was, I was meant to be your mom, and your world changes, and everything about you is about that baby. And she was all about that baby. Like, Walker was her world, is her world, you know. She was the forever henpecked mom, like, you're not doing it right, hold him this way, don't do it that way, burp him this way, and she would drive people crazy, but she was a wonderful mother. And I think he was probably 3 months old when she called me crying, and she said, Mom, I'm just so sad, it doesn't make sense, I'm happy, but I'm so sad, and I can't stop crying. And I said, you go to a doctor. Depression had been a thing in her past, and we knew, like, she had lichen sclerosis, so her body doesn't produce a lot of estrogen, and so hormones had always been a touchy thing for her, so up and down, and having a baby creates a lot of hormones, and she was breastfeeding, and et cetera, et cetera. And every new mom, you know, your world changes the instant you become pregnant. And his world may not change until that baby's old enough for him to do things with it, you know? So she's battling all these new mom traumas that we all survive and we think we survive, you know? And I kept telling her, you're just tired, you're just tired. And she went to the doctor, like she's supposed to. She said, I'm sad, I'm crying. And they gave her pills. They're supposed to, you know, take 4 to 5 weeks to stabilize if you take them correctly. And they sent her home with pills and a baby. No psych referral, no counseling referral, no we need to follow up, no nothing, no home assistance, just really no protocol for someone, you know, we're diagnosing with postpartum depression, we're going to send you home with some medicine and baby and call us if you need us. Okay. So she goes home and she's taking her meds and they're not really working. You get the underwater swimmy feeling, you know, and it causes a lot of people to not take it, but she's taking them and things go good and they're up and down. And I think it was November. So she decided it's time to get back on birth control, had the Explanon implant put in, one of the first, if you look at Explanon, one of the first precautions or, you know, disclaimers on there is should not be administered to someone with a history of depression, postpartum depression. So the same doctor that was treating her for depression gave her the implant, which was not a good idea. And she went on kind of a bit of a hormonal roller coaster. She had a lot of body changes or problems that were occurring and acne, and she was irregular and the mood swings were pretty horrendous. And so she decided in January, it had been in a month and a half, maybe two at best, that she wanted it taken out because she just couldn't do it anymore. So she went in early January to have it removed, and they removed it, put a stitch in. She went home, and she works in the medical field, so she knows a lot. She's worked in the ER. She's done some CNA. She did some surge tech, and she's done a whole bunch of different stuff in the medical field. And she's like, she called, and she said, I think I have a, this mom, it's hot. It's got a lump on it. It's probably infected. I said, well, go call the doctor. So she goes to the doctor, and part of the implant was still in her arm, so they broke it. So I'm not, you know, we don't, I've done a lot of research on it since, but it broke off. So she got a fairly decent dose of hormones and they removed the rest of that implant. But when they initially removed the implant, they also gave her a dose of a Depo-Provera, which is 3 months birth control. So she was on a definitely hormone roller coaster. So she's on these uppers for her antidepressant, and then she's on these massive quantities of hormones that has her all over the place. And you know, dad's coming in and out of the house, and he's, I don't, you know, he doesn't know if he's coming home to the happiest girl he's ever met, or if he's coming home some, he don't even know what he did, and it's just bad, you know. So he's kind of avoiding, and she's getting angry. She called me, maybe Walker was 6 months old, and she calls me, and she opens the conversation with mom. I think I'm going crazy. She said, I'm just going crazy. And I think every parent, you know, it's our job. We fix things for them because that's what we do. And I think my first reaction was, she's my kid. She can't be crazy. And I've been accused a couple times. But you know, you think your children are perfect and you never want to admit that there's something wrong with your kid or think that there's something that they can't handle. And my response was, you know, I think I cut her off right at the pass. And I said, you're not crazy. You're a new mom. You're tired. You're working. You have your own business. You're exhausted. You're not crazy, Morgan. That is a conversation that will probably haunt me forever, because I find myself staying awake at night wondering, if I had answered that differently, would we be in this? Would I be sitting here with you? Because maybe she was trying to tell me at that point. And I, instead of saying, what makes you think you're crazy? I said, oh, you're not crazy, which could have in turn made her feel like she was crazier. Like, oh, my mom doesn't think I'm crazy. Like, I can't even tell her. So this whole scenario will definitely change the way you respond to people and the way you use the word crazy. You know, we joke about it,
right?
I might be now, but you know, I want to be very careful of the way I throw the word around, because people pay attention and they, you know, I don't want to feel, make someone feel like they can't talk about it. But so she didn't, we ended that conversation on some other note and we didn't really discuss further what she thought. And we fast forward to Walker's 8 months old. So it's, you know, February, and she seems very down and she's having some personal struggles in life, but it's nothing that, you know, you're her mom for 22 years and you know what she can and can't do. And you know how strong she is and how much she's gone through. And it is nothing in my mind that thought this situation is going to break her. You know, I would give her advice and she'd be like, I can do this. I get my strength from you. And what she was saying was all the right things, but what that was going on with her was not what she was saying. I called her on the morning of February 24th, 2020. She answered the phone. Before and after work was her and I thing. Like, we would call each other when we drive at the same time. And so I called her, and I could hear Walker in the background. He was kind of coughing. And I said, what's going on? She said, I'm doing my hair, getting ready for work. And Walker's got a cough, and I'll tell Logan to take him to the doctor today. And there was nothing in her voice that would have led me to believe, like, I'm not going to have this conversation tomorrow, you know? And she said, I'll call you after I drop him off at his other grandma's. And I get to work, and she didn't call. She sent a text that said, I don't want to cry before work. I'll call you after work. And I said, well, was it that bad? And she said, no, it's just, it's okay. It's just going to be that day. I have to get used to it. And the last message I received from her said, she said, I love you. Thank you for everything you've ever done for me. And she said, from here on out, everything I do is for Walker. I thought that meant, you know, you get through the battle you're fighting and you work it out and you move on with your life. And what I didn't know until later that day is when she sent me that message, she was already wherever, you know, where she was at. And she took her life within 10 minutes after that. And so that night when I got off work, because that was our time, by the minute I got in the car every night, I would call her and we would talk all the way home about everything you did today. She's a different kid because I'm not one that would call and say, hey, mom, let's stay at work. Like somebody got stabbed and it was the coolest thing in surgery. I'm like, that is not my idea of a cool day. But she would tell me all about her work. And she loved working in the medical field. As long as she wasn't touching fingers and toes, we were good. She couldn't do that. But she would tell me about that stuff. And then she'd tell me all the new things that Walker did because his other grandma was great about always sending her pictures at work. And just the stresses in life, and decompress before she went home. Get everything off your chest. You have to get on the phone. And I called her and she didn't answer. And I thought, okay, maybe she's still, maybe they're busy at work or they're tied up with a procedure or something. You know, and I called and called and called all the way home. And I talked to my son and he said, I can't get a hold of her. And I said, me neither. And he said, well, I cooked her supper. And I said, well, we'll give her a little while and then we'll, you know, so I'm gonna go home and I'll call you in a little bit. And I got home and I told my husband I can't get a hold of her. And it was, you know, my husband had lost a daughter 23 years ago. And he had this strange, you know, look, like, because he knew it was so odd that we didn't talk. He always knows he can't call me at night because, you know, I'm on the phone with Morgan. So, and he had gone to the bedroom and was in and out. And Chance, I called my daughter that was away at college. And I said, hey, have you heard from Mo? Oh, yeah, she texted me this morning at 7:30 and told me she loved me. I said, what, anything else? Nope. And Chance came through the door and he said he was on the phone. And he said, something's wrong. And I said, who are you talking to? Dad, which would be the real dad. He said, yeah. He got the same text everybody else got. Thank you for everything you've ever done for me. And I love you. You know, the relationship she had with her real dad was very up and down and volatile. And in that moment, when my eyes met with my son's, I know in the background, my husband had headed for our bedroom. What I didn't know is what he did in the bedroom was called the police. Like, he knew instantly. And me and my son knew instantly. Like, I have a writing that I shared maybe the day after she passed that I'll share later on. But when they say a mom knows, the mom just knows. I never believed it until that day. But in that moment, looking at my son, something inside me started to break. And it was just like one fiber at a time was breaking. And if I'm honest with myself, I knew at that minute, I knew she was gone. But I also knew I had two children that were going to be looking at me, expecting me to be strong until we knew what was up. And it took several hours, but we'll talk more about that later. But so February 24th, 2020, my world changed. And it was not something I ever expected. It's not something, you know, it goes back to my grandma used to say, you don't play the hand you want, you play the hand you're dealt. So here we are, we're trying to get through the day. And so let's hear a little bit about yours, Dawn.
So I also have three children. My oldest, Stephanie, is now 26. I had to think about that for a minute. Brittany, my middle child, was 23. And my youngest, Zach, is 17. And we live in a small community. My husband and I have been married for, 26 years now. And I guess our journey started early. We have a pretty tight-knit family system. He comes from a family of 9 children, and my parents both come from big families. I have 1 sibling. But growing up with our children, we did a lot of things together. Very seldom were our kids, at daycare. We took our kids everywhere with us most of the time. And our oldest and our youngest both have special needs. And so Brittany, our middle child, kind of took on that role responsibility that you talked about as being kind of the mother hen and had a very strong bond with them. But she was also very independent. She was very, she would say OCD. She wanted things her way and expected them that way. And she started off life, I would say, fairly good. When she got to be about 6th, 7th grade, she started having some medical issues and had gone through quite a bit of testing to try to figure out what was going on. In 8th grade, she ended up having her spleen removed, and she continued to have some of the symptoms, I guess. She would have a really fast heart rate, and her blood pressure would drop, and she would pass out frequently. Number of concussions growing up as well, which I think maybe played into part of this role, but can't say for sure. So she struggled through the end of middle school. In high school, she was also diagnosed with some epilepsy and POTS, which stands for post-orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. So basically, her blood pressure would drop and her heart rate would increase and she would pass out. So she was big into running track and cross country, and she would be running and all of a sudden she'd just fall over. And obviously because of that, the school said, we can't have her doing these things. She's a liability. If she falls, gets hurt. So she had to quit doing the running and the sports, and very devastating for her. And I think things, started to change for her then. I think depression kind of kicked in. She got mixed up with the wrong crowd. And I wouldn't say the wrong crowd, but some of the people she was hanging with would not probably have met the standards that I would have liked. She graduated early and moved out. And she visited frequently, but she was very independent, wanted to do things her way. Still continued to have a strong relationship with her siblings. But in 2017, I believe it was 2016, somewhere in there, she had attempted suicide. And during that time, she was hospitalized for approximately a week. And we played pretty close attention to her during those times. I think, you were talking about how you kept a very close eye on her. You wanted to know what medication she was on and where she was and when she was there. And I think as a mom, that, is something that we all want to do at times. And we honestly thought she was doing really well. She had just started a new job not too long ago and seemed very happy. Had met a new man in her life, and things seemed to be going really well. And I know there was a fallout with some of her friends on some issues, but I think really she was tired of being tired. Her poor body was just in this vicious cycle where, she worked herself very hard, and that compromised her body. And then she would have issues, go to the hospital, then have more bills. And, you know, it was just a vicious cycle. So our day changed on July 24th, 2020, when the police officer called and asked if we were home. And I knew the officer, and I said yes. And he said he'd like to stop down. And I didn't think much of it at the time. And when he got there, he had told me that my daughter passed. And I would say, you know, there's a fog that we're going to talk about a little bit later. But I think on that day, you're on autopilot. You just can't seem to slow things down. And you do what you need to survive that day and the next week. But that's, I guess, how our life has changed. And since then, we are just trying to find the new us and how we navigate this life without our child.
No, I think that was one of these, like, our main goal is, I listen to podcasts at work and always trying to get some insight from other people on how they're handling it. And we had talked one day about how I was listening to one and it was almost painful. And I said, this is stuff we can read in a book. This isn't the real thing. This doesn't tell anybody what the first days are like or how hard it is. So we wanted to make something that was real and raw and shows you a definite picture of what it is really like. So here we are, and we're going to share a lot of ups and downs in the future. And we look forward to hearing from all of you guys and see what you have to add.
And if there's any questions that you guys have or any issues that you would like us to address in our podcast, we would appreciate you just throwing a message out there for us, and we will do our best to answer those questions.